Hey everyone, welcome to the Growing a Core Family Podcast, where we talk about family from a father's perspective. Hey, and sometimes we have a little fun. My name is Dwight Hudson.
I am Casey Polk.
And I am Raja Jackson. If you already have or desire to have a family and you want to grow with us, this is the place for you.
You will get to hear some conversations that men typically don't have, as it involves being a dad or a father figure.
All right, fellas, I think they get it. Let's jump into this episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Growing the Core Family Podcast. We are here again. This is in the second book, talking about the different types of father. Before we jump into that, Raja, Casey, how are you all doing? You all
doing okay? Everything's good, brother. Everything's good. Busy. It's a lot, busy. Of different moving pieces right now, but everything's good. Blessed.
Good, good, good. And the kiddos are doing well, keeping you guys busy, or what's happening?
Yeah, definitely busy. We shared offline that Shannon has picked up a different job, so she has to actually go into the office 2 times a week. So we don't have any childcare for Sky. With us both being at home, we were just tag teaming. We would have work blocks, but now with Shannon going into work, I have Sky pretty much all day. So that's been a nice little adjustment period for me.
That's all right, man. two boys, it's pretty busy on my end. I mean, the cool part I have about having multiples is that they play with each other. Mm-hmm. They keep each other entertained. So even though they're entertained, they also now get into stuff together. So it's just like, y'all, I just need y'all not to double team right now, because this is a whole lot. Or big brother's trying to throw little brother off the couch, and it's just like, y'all, this is too much. So
just relax.
But it's cool. It's fun. Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. On our front, we, Avery has started school. So we, Allison and I, made a decision to put her in school, which has been a journey. After day three, she came home sick with a fever. And then we had to keep her out Friday. So then we found out that there was a case of hand, foot, and mouth disease. Had no idea what that was. Didn't know even that existed until this very moment. I saw it on the news, but I didn't pay attention to it at all. But there was a case of that at the school. She did not get it, praise the God. But she is, but she's doing well. So all of that. So, but things are changing around here. So as well.
I'll say, Dwight, just be prepared, because we were on a streak like every single month, new sickness.
Bro, I remember like talking to you, like, how y'all doing? Sick again. Like, bro, you were just sick last week.
Yes. And then having two, it's like the first one gets it, passes it to the little one, then the little one's still underneath us, so he passes it to us. It's just like this cycle. So yeah, just be prepared, Dwight. It's okay. Coming, man. I'm sorry.
All right, cool. I'll prepare myself. Anywho, so for this episode, we actually have a guest with us today, a special guest. We have Pastor Kyle Ray with us. He is a pastor at Sit Church out in Texas. I believe it's Plano, Texas. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so, Pastor Kyle, welcome to the Growing the Core Podcast. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for the invitation to be on the podcast.
Awesome, awesome. Maybe give us a quick 1 minute spiel about just you as a person. And just tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, so I'm married to Petra. We've been married 23 years. It'll be 24 in July. Awesome. We have 3 kids. Malik just turned 25 yesterday. And Dwight, you know him because you mentored him for a while. And then Matthew, who's 23. And then Mimi, who is upstairs washing her hair. She's 10.
awesome.
I didn't time this well. So I was told, Petra's out of town for 2 weeks. And so Mimi wants her hair cleaned up a little bit tonight because she's going to the symphony tomorrow on a field trip. So I was told to get some conditioner, some deep conditioner. And then she's going to come down here. I'm going to have to be like, I didn't time it well. I'm sorry. I'm going to be putting it in from root to tip. She's going to have to sit for 15 minutes and then go rinse it out. So I'm learning about hair care, just like you learned about hand, foot, and mouth disease. So if you see some hair in the shot or a little face pop in, that's Mimi. And we lived in Texas for about 3.5 years. We grew up in Detroit, so in Michigan.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we told you, this podcast is real informal. So if even she wants to say something and speak to the people, she's welcome to do that as well. But we brought you on because we've been kind of talking about different types of fathers and just like the different like fatherhood journeys and fatherhood stories. And I know that adoption is a passion area of yours. in that you have adopted three children and in total, and just want to just kind of just dive into that, because we know that there are some parents, some families, for various reasons, choose to adopt by choice, by necessity, by family. Different things happen that cause children to want to adopt. So we want to just kind of get some perspective on that, and just kind of hear your adoption story, and just like maybe just kind of have some dialogue around what it means to be an adoptive father and all that comes with that. So just, I guess, just real quick, maybe can you share with us kind of like your adoption story?
Yeah, and I'll just say, just in terms of stating it accurately, we technically adopted twice. So, I mean, we adopted two boys. When it comes to Mimi, we can't adopt her. That's a longer story. She's more protective of her story. But in the state of Texas, we are her non-parental managerial conservators. And so it just means we're like her legal guardians. And she's lived with us since she was 4 and she's 10 now. So there's a whole lot more backstory to that. But yeah, our boys were adopted. Our adoption story is simply, we got married in 1999. We, desired to have kids. It wasn't happening. We weren't one of those. I guess we never thought about maybe we're struggling with infertility. That word just didn't come up. It was something we just figured it wasn't God's timing. And so, we didn't know why we weren't having kids, hadn't given much thought to it. And then one day in 2007, I came home from work. And my wife, who we never talked about adoption. My wife, Petra, said, "I think I saw our adoptive son on the internet today." And I was like, "What are you? What are you talking about?" Like, we had never talked about this. But she had been talking to a friend who was looking at what's called the Michigan Adoption Resource Exchange, which is the database that housed those older kids who would most likely age out of foster care, whose parental rights had been terminated. And a lot of them were minority children. Oftentimes, older minority children kind of just languish in the foster care system and never get adopted. So she was looking at that site because the friend was adopting, and she was watching these tearjerker videos, and she saw a 12-year-old African-American boy, and God tugged at her heart. So when she told me that, I was shocked, but we prayed about it, decided to take the next step to at least explore what foster care and adoption looked like. We ended up calling Bethany Christian Services and told them, what we were thinking. We might want to adopt an older African-American boy. Long story short, we went through the training, foster care process, all of that. And then once we were trained, they started sending us case files and paperwork. Didn't seem like a good match for any. And then they said, "Well, would you be interested in looking at a sibling group?" So we're like, "Sure." And, we ended up looking at the files of two boys, 8 and 10 years old, Malik and Matthew, who we first met in January of 2008, and then they moved into our home in April of 2008, right after spring break. And our story is that we went from 0 kids to 2 kids, just like that. There was a honeymoon period, and then reality set in, and parenting is not for the faint of heart. So
definitely not.
And as I mentioned, they're 23 and 25 now. So that's it in a nutshell. That's how they ended up in our home. God called us out of the blue.
That's awesome.
I am curious. You kind of talked about the paperwork and the stuff. Maybe can you? You probably will have the Michigan perspective, but maybe can you just share like what does that look like? Because I know like when I think of adoption, because adoption really wasn't a thing growing up for me. Like you, unless like your grandma raised you, like that was like the closest thing to adoption that we had. But we really didn't have an idea of formal adoption and all that it took, the type of money that we. I just have no clue about it. So I'm just curious. Maybe talk about like some of that, just so folks are understanding how that works.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So, step one was when we called the adoption agency, they said, "Well, you got to go through training, because even if you want to adopt an older child, technically you'd be a licensed foster home first." So most states have a class. At the time in Michigan, it was 2 full Saturdays. I think for us, we were a little bit guarded with sharing that we were even going through that class, because we thought, what if we go through the class and we change our mind? We don't want folks to think that we're fickle, right? And we also knew we didn't necessarily feel called to have like a different kid coming into our home every few months. We felt specifically called to adopt. So anyway, we went through the training, this 2 full days training, and they try and get you to not look at this through rose-colored lenses, right? So one exercise that stands out to me is they had this sheet of adjectives that they gave us in training. with four columns of adjectives. And they said, circle the adjectives of the type of child you think you can handle in your home. Well, all the adjectives were negative, right? And it was by design, right? So it was like, likes to play with fire, history of substance abuse, past suicide attempts, aggressive, defiant, harmful, you know, harmful to pets, right? And history of sexual abuse, medically fragile. So we circled about half of these adjectives because there were some things we felt like, we're not ready for that. Like, we can't handle that. But I remember feeling convicted by God. Like, the cool thing about God's love for us is he would say, I'll take them all. Right? I'll circle all the adjectives. So, you know, they try and give you a perspective. So then when they started giving you paperwork, I almost say it was like code language, right? So you'd be reading the paperwork and it'd say, Johnny probably needs to be the oldest child in whatever family he goes into. Mm-hmm. He'll need someone to advocate for him at the schools. And he likes to build things. And sometimes if he doesn't get his way, he's learning how to express his emotions in a healthy way. And we're like, man, we know exactly what they're saying. That dude, we're going to be at the school all the time. He can't control his emotions. I mean, that wasn't a deal breaker. It's just, they tried to paint the kids in as positive light as possible. Sometimes there'd be stacks of counseling paperwork. There would be school paperwork. But the sad part was sometimes we would get a file of paperwork on a kid that was 2 years out of date. So we'd be asking questions. Are they still taking these meds? Are they still in counseling? You know, are they still living in this placement? And just the load on caseworkers in the system is tough. So ultimately, when we got paperwork on Malik and Matthew, yeah, it was a big file of paperwork. And as far as cost, there is no cost for older children in the foster system. In fact, we didn't know this, but once the adoption or once they were placed, the state said, we're going to start sending you a check every month. We're like, huh? They're like, there's an adoption subsidy check. Basically, it's trying to close that gap for what these kids missed out on in their earlier years. So it's trying to supplement the care you're providing, and you're going to be getting these checks until you're 18 years old. Well, some people do it for the money. Mm-hmm. We had no idea about this money that was coming. So it served as a huge blessing to help us care for the boys.
I had a really quick question. I was listening to that and you mentioned that you had to be a licensed foster home because they were a quote unquote older child. So with that, is there like an age cutoff and does that vary from state to state?
It was just because we're going to adopt, period. So think of it this way. If you're going to adopt anybody, technically you're opening a foster license first because that's the standard training. But they call it foster to adopt. So it's they know going into it, you're not going to say to the agency, hey, I'm open to anyone. Call me at midnight if you need to, because my home is always open. They just kind of know what you're getting into. But the requirements are all the same.
Understood.
Yeah. And, you know, like with any foster process, there's a home study typically. They have to come out to your house and make sure you have an emergency exit plan that you have to like draw out. Make sure you have like a fire extinguisher. There's just a checklist of requirements. And some states are more rigorous than others. And a lot of it has to do with just, obviously, there's been some states where foster children were harmed because the standards got lax. And so, you know, some states are more aggressive about it than others.
Okay. Well, that helps a whole lot. Like that's a lot of context. Didn't realize it sounds like it's a lot of work. And I guess once you all decided that you were going to adopt, then you had kind of learned all of this. Did any of that like kind of say like, hey, hold on, maybe this isn't for us. Like, was there any like hesitation after you kind of saw the load or expectation from all the pieces?
There wasn't any hesitation on the load from the training side of things. There was hesitation when the boys moved in because there's a time period between them moving in and the adoption being finalized, right? So like they move in and they're not going to finalize the adoption right away. They want to make sure it's a good fit. And then they're hoping that like within a year, you've determined this is a good fit and they can finalize it. But ultimately, a lot of communities, they only do a court date one day out of the month to finalize adoptions. And so let's just say, you know, you decide they moved in April. Let's say we knew by August that this was a good fit. Well, the court docket might have been full till October, right? Mm. In our case, they moved in April. the honeymoon lasted to maybe July. And then when I discovered that one of ours really struggled with stealing and lying, and I realized that those are real triggers for my own anger, there were second thoughts, right? And so we actually pushed out the process. And then at some point, the caseworker was asking us, like, hey, the judge is wondering, are you finalizing this thing or not? Because for the sake of the boys, for their stability, we need to know. Yeah. And so there's a story in that, you know, where we changed our minds, and then God made it clear that we needed to keep the boys. And so, so the rest is history. All right. Dwight, I think you've heard that story. I don't know if you want me to share it or not, but
feel free to share it. Share what you like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Mimi, you can say hi. I gotta put this in your hair. We gotta set the timer 15 minutes. Come on. I know. I forgot. I have to do a podcast. Can you say hello to Mr. Dwight? Do you remember him from KCC? Come on. Right here. Huh? Okay. After I get off the podcast, we'll be watching a movie while I do your hair. So anyway, on a Tuesday morning, we had been praying, asking God to give us wisdom about whether or not our oldest son, whether or not we could adopt him, because he was, I mean, it was almost like putting baby gates around your whole house. We had to lock our doors, lock our pantry doors. I mean, like lots of stuff. And it was really difficult. So we were praying and weren't getting a clear answer, turning face that way. Whoever's watching this podcast, if y'all have any female viewers, they're about to say, what is that man doing to that girl? Here, do y'all have daughters? I'm just playing.
I have a daughter, Dwight, as well. So I'm definitely in that learning process.
How old?
Well, mine is just barely 1.5.
Okay. All right. Well, look, don't mock my technique. This is deep, deep, deep conditioner.
Yes, right? Sir.
Yeah. So anyway, and I'm being very generous because she's about to go rinse it out in 15 minutes anyway. Anyway, we've been praying, seeking wisdom, counsel, weren't getting clear answer. And we came to the conclusion, like there was a straw that broke the camel's back kind of moment. We're like, we can't do it. We can't adopt him. And the summer had just started. You know, we had hired a college student to be like a nanny because we both worked. She was going to be with the boys all summer. And I came home from work on Tuesday and I said, look, I don't know what this means for your summer job. I know we just hired you. All I know is we can't move forward with this adoption. And so then she came by on Wednesday. I was at work. We had called the caseworker. And when I got home from work Wednesday, she had written me a letter. She said, Pastor Kyle, can I read you this letter that I felt like God wanted me to write? So she started reading this letter and it was like, Pastor Kyle, I don't know if you and Petra realize how much of a difference you've made in these boys' lives. And she said, like, I've seen them grow. I've seen how they've responded to your love. She talked about how, Pastor Kyle, you're supposed to be the outreach pastor at the church. And if anybody needs outreach, it's these boys. And oh, by the way, if you're not going to keep Malik, then you need to let Matthew go too, because they're brothers. They came together and they need to stay together. Yeah. But I just really believe that they're supposed to be with you. And so I felt led to let you know that. And so when she did that in the kitchen that day, I felt like that was God speaking to me through her. The clarity we had been praying for had come, right? And so we called back the caseworker on Thursday morning, said, hey, look, we feel like we heard from God. We changed our mind. And the caseworker's like, I was hoping that you would do that. I just couldn't tell you, right? And so at that point, that's when we realized, just like a toddler needs baby gates and outlet covers, we needed to put some things in place to keep him, to remove some of the temptations to steal. And that just meant I could never leave my cell phone sitting out on the counter. I could never leave my wallet sitting out. It was tough, but we learned a lot along the way.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think it's good for people to hear that, because I think a lot of times when people think adoption, they see like the Instagram version of adoption, which is just like, and in most cases, being quite frank, right? Which is, and even the celebrity perspective, it's like some rich celebrity goes to some third world country and adopts some random child. But the, but the idea of like a regular, I don't say regular, but like a normal family living in a regular space, adopting like another child, like in that space, I don't think we hear a lot about that. And even if we do, Oftentimes, you know, people aren't really willing to speak about it just because they want to keep it hidden. But to kind of have this conversation, I think is good for people to understand like this happens and to understand. I especially like the part about the you talked about earlier about the negative adjectives and to hear the real side of it. Right? Like it's parts of it are going to be tough. Parts of it are going to be great. Just legitimately like birthing a child. Like it's the same exact kind of some aspects of it's just like. This is good. This is not so good. It's things you have to adjust to, but kind of in that stream of thought, what were your expectations of adoption versus the reality of adoption? Like right, like so, like there's an idea of like even with us, like we talked about like how we were expecting when we have kids, this is what's going to be like, but later found out that it was actually quite different. What were some of your expectations of adoption? And then what were the realities that you experienced?
Yeah, so I will tell you, when they were sending us through the training, there was one video I remember they showed us where this this boy in foster care sat down at the table and his foster mom put a plate of food in front of him. And he was like, "I don't want none of your food, B." Right, he cussed at her in the video. And we thought, that'll never happen in our household, right? We're going to show our children so much love. They would never do anything like that. And we thought that until that stuff started happening in our household. And I would just say our expectation was that we would show them so much love, that they would see such a strong Black man and Black woman, that they would want to be like us. And because we had come from a high, you know, education, because we had gotten both have two master's degrees, all this stuff, that they would value education and all of that. The reality was we were dealing with a lot of trauma that, you know, they had experienced things that they got exposed to and no child should ever have to experience, even before, and more so in foster care before us versus the dysfunctional family of origin they came out of. And you're dealing with some DNA. And so like they said something in training, like a lot, most or a lot of foster care kids in foster care don't end up going to college, even though in a lot of states, if you end up in foster care and you want to go to college, the state will pay for it. They were like, most of them don't go. And we thought, wow, our kids will be in college. And you know, the reality is neither one of them did college. So we just thought our love would be enough to just not only give them a normal life, but overcome all of their trauma. And the reality is, Sometimes that's not enough, right? Like, and sometimes, and everybody's wired differently. So, you know, at this point, our oldest son is incarcerated. You know, he's just turned 25 yesterday. He has been incarcerated for just over 3 years, but this isn't his first stint in prison. And we talk regularly. We talked today. He is an upbeat, gifted, optimistic young man who has a lot of life left to live. And, you know, we look forward to when he gets out and are trying to continue to pray for him and help him grow while he's in there. And then our 23-year-old, he drives an Amazon Prime van in Michigan and works hard, has a great friend group, saving money, loves his job. Again, a lot of life left. He may go to college someday or he may not. You start to realize everybody's not wired to do it exactly the same way as what we did. So there was I say the difference between what you expect and what you get is known as grief. That gap is known as grief. And all of us experience grief in some areas. And what you start to realize is, so I can sit and get stuck in grief, or I can say, you know what? This is what it is. I'm going to love them. And I never want them to think that my love for them is based on performance by them.
That's good.
So, those are some of the things that we learned along the way.
I wanted to ask Pastor Kyle, so once you adopt, is there any other like ongoing support that I guess the state provides, or like is there additional counseling that you may be able to take the boys to or anything like that?
Yeah, in a lot of communities, there are these adoption support parent resource groups. Okay. And then a lot of the agencies have ongoing like continuous education training for adoptive and foster parents. And I remember one of them that really stood out for us, like oftentimes you go and they try and make it like a respite night too. Because a lot of times if you adopt or foster traumatized kids, sometimes you just need a break, right? And so they would set it up to where it's training for the parents, but it's also some childcare there just so you can get a couple hours of respite. So I remember we went to one where it was actually kind of talking about the relationship between an adoptee and their biological parents. It was actually a Korean adoptee who had been adopted by a white family in the United States. And it depicted in this video that this woman was asking her adoptive mom, like, what do you think my mom was like? And the adoptive mom was like, I don't know. She's like, oh, no, what do you think she did for a living? And adoptive mom's like, I really don't know. She said, I really don't care because, you know, you were born in our hearts and we just love you. And the lady looked at her adoptive mom and said, children are not conceived in hearts. I would feel like you cared more about me if you cared more about what my mom might have been like. Mm. And that was like mind blowing for us, like, because at that point we knew where the boy's biological mother was. Like when they came into our care, she was in a drug rehab, you know, program, and the judge had terminated her rights because she had told him, I'll be back in, you know, Michigan in 6 months and I'll be able to take care of my boys. And the judge is like, the boy's mental health is too important for me to trust that you're going to be clean in 6 months. But about 6 months after she moved in, after they moved in with us, she actually was clean. She got out. And so we knew from their older sister, because they have five siblings, we knew where she was, but we were wrestling with, do we make contact with her? Mm-hmm. But when we saw that training, we were like, we have to make it safe for our boys to ask questions about their family of origin. Because a lot of adoptees don't feel safe asking, because they assume that if they ask, then somehow we might think that they don't love us as much. And so then after that, we ended up going to meet their mom. They met their mom. And yeah, one of them, Malik, our oldest, he maintains communication with her. And Matthew, our youngest, really has no desire to. So they're different in that regard. But at least we made it safe for them to meet them. And that flowed out of some of that training that the state provided.
Hope you are enjoying the episode so far. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and remember to leave those 5-star ratings and some cool reviews. Now, back to the episode.
I want to go someplace, but I don't want to leave here yet. But it's the matter of them wanting to know about kind of their past. That was one of the questions we were going to ask. It's like, you know, at what age based on, like, I guess some of the friends that you know that potentially that are adoptive parents as well, like, is there a right or a best practice in, like, how do you tell a child? Like, in your case, Malik and Matthew knew that they were adopted due to the foster care, but, like, is there a good time to do that? And how do you prepare yourself for that? And then how do you deliver it that you've seen?
I understand that question. It's a great question. So on the one hand, I would say every situation is different. If you adopt an infant, say you bring somebody home from the hospital when they're like 3 days old. So the state, you know, you're kind of deciding from the outset, is this an open adoption or a closed adoption? And if it's an open adoption, that means you'll maintain relationship with the birth parent, but you still, as adoptive parents, have some control over boundaries, just like you would any other adult that you allow to interact with your child. If it's a closed adoption, then technically it is what it is. It's closed, right? So you're not obligated to, I'm in the camp of you should tell a child that they're adopted, and I'll get to the age in a minute, but you're not obligated to share any of the records, and there may be good reasons why you don't. The age all depends on what the circumstances were with the birth parent, right? Because if the birth parent was, you know, addicted to some substance, ended up being arrested, baby was born in prison, and ultimately birth parent died in prison, right? Well, can a 4-year-old really handle that, right? Can an 8-year-old handle that truth? Every situation's different. Versus, let's just say it's a 19-year-old that gets pregnant, decides, I just really am not in a position to take care of this child, and gives the child up for adoption, and really doesn't want any interaction in the child's life. Yeah, you might tell them that at a younger age, but it depends on the emotional maturity of the child. It depends on the trauma that the birth parent was exposed to. For me, I would say most adoptive parents probably experience a certain level of, I'm not so sure I want to tell them because what if they don't love me as much kind of feeling. And what they don't realize is at the same time, the adoptive child is feeling like, I'm not so sure I want to ask because they might question how much I love them. So it's this dance where people aren't talking. For me, what was convicting was I watched that movie. Not only was that Training I mentioned, but I watched that movie, Antoine Fisher. And there's a scene at the end of Antoine Fisher where he shows up to meet his birth family. And he sees all these people around the table that look like him, that resemble him, that he didn't know he had his whole life. And I thought, these boys need to be able to ask questions, all sorts of questions. And we need to, as adoptive parents, try and help them fill in the gaps of their story as much as possible and not worry about whether or not they'll love us any less. So it just all depends.
I had a really quick question for you. I understand from the introduction that you guys adopted your daughter at a younger age than your two sons. Was that intentional or did it just kind of come about?
So again, not adoption, but
sorry, yes, sir.
No, the story is simply, when Malik, our oldest son, moved out of our home at 18, our feeling was like when he moved out, it was like there was this collective sigh in the household, right? Like it was all of a sudden I could leave my wallet out. I could leave my phone. I could leave money on the counter. And so it was almost like, right? Like it was just, and Matthew was, you know, he was 16 and he was probably sophomore in high school. And I don't know. We felt like, I felt like this adoption journey was so difficult because we had a lot of just button heads with Malik. And I had been a vocal advocate for caring for vulnerable children, adoption, foster care, safe families, all that stuff. When he moved out, I was like, I can't advise anybody to take this journey with integrity. I will I'll never take another traumatized child into our household ever again.
Got it.
That's what I said. And then about a year later, Mimi was a little girl at our church and we started hanging out. She stole our hearts and time healed some wounds. And she was in need of, you know, some people. And it was a guard, you know, again, I'm kind of guarding her story, but just, we moved into a guardianship role. And then all of a sudden, what we saw is like the light at the end of the tunnel for being empty nesters. Yeah, that changed. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm at, you know, kindergarten, open house, you know, in my 40s. So
question I have is, so like in the midst of all of that, like, so you know, all the roles, like you're a pastor, you're all the sorts of thing, but you're a husband as well. So maybe talk about the dynamics of, because like when we talk, like all of us are married, we know that we talk from a place of marriage here on this podcast. So maybe like, what did your marriage journey look like during this, like before, during, and then kind of even now, like what was the marriage journey?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, adoption, you all can probably relate to this just in general. When you become parents, it can really challenge a marriage, right? You have to stay on the same page. And as kids get older, I just remember, like, I remember the times we'd be walking. Petra and I used to always hold hands. We'd walk anywhere. And then when the boys came, our youngest son really wanted to be in between both of us. So he'd come and pull our hands apart so that we could each hold one of his hands. And that's just the symbolic nature of, like, sometimes kids will try and put one at odds with the other one, the husband against the wife. Where we experienced it the most, though, is like, there's little things at first. Obviously, I was a boy. I was a little boy once, right? And so I knew about, you run around the playground, you might tear up the jeans, get a hole in your jeans. I remember, like, when the boys first came, Petra had this thought that she wanted them to dress up in Dockers every day for school. So she bought, went to Old Navy, she stocked up on some Dockers and some polo shirts, and she wanted them to have their shirts tucked in. I'm like, okay. Well, I mean, them boys, they would go to school immediately, untuck their shirts, which became a discipline issue. But then Matthew would come home and he'd have a hole in his pants like the first day. And Petra's like, what were you doing? He was just being a boy, right? Yeah. I mean, like, he's playing at school. And so then I started realizing there were some things about parenting them that she really struggled with that just seemed natural to me because I had been in their shoes once. But I struggled to display compassion towards her And then it became too easy to write off some things as, well, you just don't understand because you were never a little boy. Mm-hmm. And so if it was, they were being disrespectful, they were talking back. You know, there were times where she felt like, I'm telling you what they were doing or what attitude they were doing it with. And I feel like you keep taking their side. Ooh, that stings. Because, you know, she's first. I knew my priorities, God, my wife, my kids, and then the church, right? Like, so they weren't first place, but there were times she felt like they were first place. Or times like she would say, I'll tell them to go upstairs and fold their clothes. And then you're like a little parrot. You come along and say, yeah, go upstairs and fold your clothes. As if they need to hear from you to do it. As if my boy's sitting in the house. And I didn't even notice that I was doing that. So there were a lot of things like that. And ultimately, my wife and my oldest had a difficult relationship. And there were times when I felt like I could see it. It felt like spiritual warfare. There were days where it seemed like he was trying his best to connect with her. And she had had enough. She was done. Like, it was like, wow. Have you forgotten how disrespectful you were yesterday? I'm not ready to connect with you. And there were other days I saw that she was trying her best to connect with his heart. And that dude was being a jerk, right? Like, it's like, come on, man. Don't you see she's trying to love you? And it's like two ships passing in the night. They just some days couldn't connect. And it felt like Satan was just standing there like, yeah, got him. So it was tough. And, you know, we went to counseling at different times. We are not shy about that. We go to, you know, parenting classes. I remember one time we walked into a parenting class, and oftentimes it would be these moms that were in there having difficulty with their sons. And so I remember going there. I said, Petra, we walk up in this class and I'm the only dad up in here. I'm leaving. You stay here by yourself. And it was a common thing. You started to realize we weren't alone in some of the battles they were having.
Yeah. And I think, like, I guess a question like that is, like, just is there, are there some aspects, like you talk about the gap between expectation and where you are in the reality, like, are there things that you're like, man, if I raised them from babies, this would not have been like did any of that happen? Because I'm just envisioning, like, somebody, like, especially the fact that you got them older, that, like, some fathers listening would be like, I don't know, like, I need to have them young. And, like, you talked about the conviction of why you selected why you all adopted older children, but, like, is there, like, during the time of, like, the rearing and, like, you and Petra kind of going through, like, is there points just like, man, I think you get the question.
Yeah, I think you're tempted to say that often, and yet that can become a, an excuse for some things. And then there's this other reality that's like, you know, it just doesn't matter. So, like, I'd like to think that, yeah, if we had raised the boys from birth, that they'd both be at the University of Michigan, like we went to the University of Michigan. You know, like, if we had raised the boys from birth, they'd have a passion for, you know, if they had been born from us, they'd have a passion for math and science, just like we enjoy math and science. You know, you can say all these things. If we had had them since the time they were babies, they'd have a, you know, better work ethic, blah, 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 blah. And yet you all know kids have a unique personality, a unique calling.
Absolutely.
Even you all as kids, you don't know where they're going to turn out, how they're going to go. And then you start to realize some people's biological children, they feel like they've done everything right.
Yep.
And then they go off the rails. And in fact, one of the things that helped me was somebody said, God was the perfect parent. Look how his kids turned out.
Wow.
It's like, oh man, right? So yeah, there's lots of things like that. And there's things you grieve, right? I didn't get to do a graduation open house for our boys. That has to do with them not finishing senior year strong, so not graduating. We didn't get to go buy college furniture, you know, at Target and stock up on things. You know, there's a lot of things we didn't get to do, but it is what it is. I learned a lot about how to love unconditionally. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, me and Malik, as we talk today while he's, you know, in prison, it's just a healthy conversation. I can call him out on stuff. In fact, the line we used today was just, I'm like, man, you're 25 now. You got a lot of life left. It feels like you and I are on the same page. He's like, yeah, when I was 14, it didn't feel like we were on the same page. No, it didn't, son. No, it didn't. You know, so yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a couple things there. One, loving unconditionally. I think that's really It's really crucial, and you have to be intentional about it. I think it's really easy to say until things get difficult, right? When you meet that bump in the road, I think that's when you really, really have to lean on your faith and whatever, you know, strong foundation you have within your life. So I think that was one really big thing. And then the other key point that you made that I kind of want to reiterate is just like, you can do as much as you can for your child, but you don't really have like true control of the path that this child is going to take. Like me and my wife, right. We talk about like you could have two kids in the identical household and they just go two separate ways. Like, so absolutely. That's just something I just wanted to reiterate.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's a great point. And so I think at some point I remember talking to God one morning, I was journaling and I felt like, God, it's really, really hard to love, you know, to love these children. And it was like, God said, you think you're pretty lovable, huh? You think you're pretty easy to love, huh? Mm. And I was like, well, actually I do. Like, but you know, I'm not as easy to love as I think I am. I mean, I've messed up. I had my knucklehead years, right? Right.
Yeah.
Did some dumb things. And so then, God's like, you're not so easy to love, but I still love you. And I'm like, but I'm not you, God. And he's like, yeah, but I live in you. I live in you as the Holy Spirit. So it's not that I love you because you're so lovable, Kyle. I love you because I'm loving. I love you because I choose to love. And so I felt like I had to flip and be able to love my boys no matter what. And so even when Malik turned 18 and he moved out, you know, it wasn't the end of his senior year. It was like April of his senior year. And we were butting heads. And I felt like, you're a grown man now. I'm not going to be sitting arguing with a grown man in my own house. I know we definitely had more of a tough love approach. Right. But I said, look, you don't want to live under our authority. We're not asking you to do much. And so we're going to help you find a place. He was already working because he wasn't going to school regularly. And we found him a place where he had to pay $100 a week. So $100 a week rent. In a room, he was working at a factory job on second shift, so he could still go to school during the day. We had bought a $500 Pontiac Sunfire, a 1999 Pontiac Sunfire for Matthew. We decided to give it to Malik, but put the paperwork all in his name. And he was out middle of April. By July 8th, he was homeless. And July 10th, we were preparing to leave the country. And so people say, well, what'd you do? I picked his stuff up from his place, brought it back to our garage. And then I went and I dropped him off at a homeless shelter in Grand Rapids. And I told him, son, Grand Rapids has a great set of homeless shelters. So if you follow their rules and follow their program, you can get on your feet. But that's up to you. But the reality was, he and I would have a better relationship with him out of the house than with us constantly arguing, possibly coming to fists and blows in the house. And yeah, his path has been rough from 18 to now 25. But I can tell he's maturing. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if not for a sense I had gotten from the Lord when he was 16 that Malik would be just fine when he was 23 years old. And I was like, what does that mean? Yeah. Does that mean he's going to be like living in his purpose? Does that mean he's going to be dead with you in eternity? Does that mean he's going to be leading Bible study in prison? And it was like, God said, don't worry about it. Just trust me. And so, you know, I trusted the Lord. And when you know that you know that you know, the guy's got it covered. God knew them before I knew them. Yeah, it made it a lot easier to make some of those tough decisions. And ultimately, I think we preserved our relationship through it all.
Oh, that's very good. We may have you back on like when we get into the later years of parenting, just because like we're so, you know, with infants, like toddlers, like the little things. Mm-hmm. But like, I think that this is wisdom for like the future. Definitely. For like, I think even for like Casey with two boys and then like potentially the us having more kids and stuff like that, and what that would look like, that's somewhat vital, especially like the father to father, I mean, father to son perspective versus father to daughter, and mm-hmm. how do you manage that as well? So, no, that's good. Do you guys have, okay, I have one kind of final kind of wrap up question, but Casey, Roger, you guys got any other questions or anything else you want to share?
No, this has been great. I really feel like I did not know much about adoption, and my only frame of reference was like the TV show This Is Us.
Oh yeah,
that's like from the opposite side of the story. So yeah, it's just like, this is really, really, really cool to hear. I really appreciate you sharing all that you've shared.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm still an advocate. I'm back to advocating for adoption. The reality is, they say there's like they used to say the stat might be different now. They say there's 163 million orphans in the world. And there's 3.5 billion Christians. And the math just says, man, if more Christian households would step up and adopt, a lot of states could just clear out the foster roles in their state. Like in a lot of states, there's more churches than there are children waiting to be adopted. Mm-hmm. And we know not every family is capable of taking on the needs of some of the vulnerable children who are waiting. But man, if just one family in every church stepped up, in a lot of states, you would quickly end those that are, you know, waiting for adoption. So I'm still as much of an advocate as I was. I just had a little bit of a break in the action. The last thing I want to say, Dwight, before you ask your final question, is just one thing that helped me all along the way was reading parenting books. I always found like I had more emotional margin if I was reading a book. And then if I wasn't reading a parenting book for a while, it was easier to have a shorter fuse. So even now, having a 10-year-old, right, like we were on vacation a couple of weeks ago in Orlando. If you've ever gone, well, you'll figure this out. When you take a kid to an amusement park, you've planned, you've saved, you've mapped it out, and you hope you're raising grateful children. However, you can't do everything at amusement parks. I've learned from the boys, I'm probably going to have some moments today at the park where I feel like she's being ungrateful. Mm-hmm. I need to prepare for that. So there's a book that I listen to called No Drama Discipline. And it's all about connecting before you correct. And that book, it might have saved her life at Universal Studios. No, I'm playing. It just gave me more emotional margin. But there are other books along the way, Parenting the Hurt Child. There's a book called Get Out of My Face for when your child looks at you and says, get out of my face. Right. Like there's all sorts of books that helped us along the way when I needed to be able to dig deeper on some emotional resources to parent our children.
Thank you so much. Because normally I do this at the end of the podcast. I'll say, are there any, like, I would normally find a book, and I had a book, but forget my book. You got practical stuff that's real. So you said no drama parenting, and I'll put these in the show notes.
Yeah, no drama discipline.
No drama discipline.
Yeah. No drama discipline is great. Parenting the Hurt Child is a great one. And then Get Out of My Face. But I think there's more than one Get Out of My Face book. So this is the one that's on parenting. When your child looks at you and says, get out of my face. Hopefully your children never look at you and say that.
Man. So really quick, I'm sorry. And you can give us a 30-second answer, Pastor Cal. When you said connect before you correct, can you just go a little bit deeper into that? Does that mean like connecting with the child or connecting with and understanding exactly what's going on and processing it?
Yes, it means connecting with the child. I'm going to just, I shared that book recently with someone, and he texted me this morning just to say thank you so much. There's a quote from the book that says, the pause between reactive and responsive is the beginning of choice, intention, and skillfulness as a parent. It's that idea of trying to understand why the child might be acting out before you react to what they're doing. So often, you know, with our 10-year-old, her emotions are so much different than the boys. So she's acting out, talking back, being disrespectful. I'm able more now to say, wait a second, when's the last time she ate? Wait a second, what could she be sad about? Or just to look at her, and you're never supposed to say, what's wrong with you? But to be able to say, what's going on? Or do you need a hug right now? And sometimes it's that hug, that connection. We can talk about the corrective behavior later. They just need to know they're loved in that moment. And a lot of times they're acting out because they feel unsafe or unstable or unloved. So.
Got it.
Awesome. Yeah. So the last question is kind of more, it's a summary question, right? What would you say to, how old were you when you adopted Malik?
Yeah. So I guess I was, I had to do the math. I was approaching 35. So I was 34. Soon to be 35.
What would you say to 34, 35-year-old you that's considering adoption and just like all the stuff that you've learned in terms from a parenting perspective? What would kind of be that like, here, take this pill and you'll make it? What would you say to younger you?
Hey, I would say you need to make sure you got a better understanding of trauma-informed parenting. I would say that you're going to learn a lot about patience and grace that you didn't realize you needed to learn. And I would say that you think spankings work, they don't. And I would just say try and understand more of why they're acting out before you are so strict on trying to correct the behavior. So, but bigger picture, be hanging there for the long haul. Like, parenting is not, it's not for the faint of heart, but it's worth it in the end.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you very much for just all the wisdom that you shared, the info about adoption, yours sharing your story, sharing, you know, Matthew Malik's story, and even Mimi's story, just like all that you've done. We truly appreciate you joining during the podcast. Any closing remarks, Casey Raja? You guys anything?
Sir, I'm good, brother. Okay. Just thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's just a lot of wisdom. Like Casey said, and Dwight, just I'll just reiterate, just we're really appreciative. Just a lot to absorb and just learn so much in this short period of time.
Awesome. Thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Awesome. Cool. Everybody, you guys have a good rest of your day, morning, night, whatever time you listen to this, and we will chat with you later. All right, peace out.
Man, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We really, really had an awesome time with it. If what you heard has sparked your interest, or you want to grow with us, or even have some helpful tips for us in the community, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram @growinthecore.